everybody, and welcome back to Orphaned Entertainment. My name is Christopher, and because I cannot do this alone, I have the lovely, the wonderful, the talented Lydia.
It sounds just like really narcissistic if I cheer at that point. So hello. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm tempted to cheer, but it just seems so wrong somehow.
Don't worry. I'll do that all in post.
Oh, well, great. Do it. At the cheering. I love cheering.
Well, thank you for joining me. It has been a while since we have sat down together and talked. We were a little busy all this month, and so this is coming a little later than we've brought the episodes prior. So our apologies.
Twice.
Tonight? Sorry, I didn't even hear what you said.
I said twice.
Twice, yes.
Yeah, I know. I throw you off when I throw in those weird little, yeah. That's all right, keep going. They love it. The audience loves this kind of stuff, don't you, audience?
That's right.
That's where the canned laughter comes in. We're so funny.
The last time we talked, we did some radio plays, and one of which was Shock, based on a 1946 film. Well, we were kind of taken by that story, and we're really curious to see how the film panned out. So we decided to take a look at it. This stars Vincent Price and Lynn Barry, and this was interesting to see the film after having listened to the radio play.
I agree. Right, yeah, I was right on that, wasn't I? No, it was interesting. I totally agree. If I'm honest, the thing that was interesting, well, the most interesting to me was the fact that they actually had the same actors doing the voice acting for the radio play as those doing the actual acting in the film. That wasn't something that I had ever considered that they'd done, but apparently that was something that they actually did during this era to promote movies.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty cool how they do it, and having the same, at least some of the stars. I don't know if they all reprised their roles in the radio play, but it's still really cool to sort of, I don't know, it's almost very modern. In a way, as far as
like the 1930s and 40s modern way, because if we're talking furniture, then yes, very modern.
No, I was talking more 21st century, as far as almost a simulcast kind of.
We are in the 21st century, aren't we?
We are. Welcome, Lydia.
We have
cookies. Yes,
cookies. Like you can eat.
Well, for those of you who may not have listened to our...
Sorry.
Yes, I'm just moving on.
Move on. Yeah, that's all right.
Moving
that's
on.
That's what you do. You're the straight man. You just move on when the non-straight man or when the crooked woman says something funny. Keep
exactly.
going.
Exactly.
Strange, I mean.
Well, for any of you who may not have listened to the radio program or heard us discuss it in our last episode, if you're just joining us, we'll kind of give you a brief synopsis of the plot of the film Shock. The film opens with a woman checking into a hotel. She is there to meet her previously POW'd husband, who's coming home from the war.
Yeah, presumed lost, as I think.
Yeah, I believe he was actually presumed dead. Yeah, that's right.
I think they said for 2 years. Is that right? Or she hadn't seen him for 2 years.
She hadn't seen him for 2 years. Correct. And she checks into a hotel and then wakes up from a very bizarre dream. How'd you like that dream sequence in the film?
You know, I actually was paying attention to the movie during that part. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit just because, yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting to see how they did dream sequences. I mean, obviously, I've seen dream sequences done in black and white movies before, but I think this one was really interesting. I think they did some things probably with the camera that most people had not seen up until that point or had not been really common. The stretching in the hallway, the way the door moved. I don't know if that was actually physical movement or if they did that with the camera. I'd probably have to go back and watch it two or three or six or seven more times to really figure it out.
I think it might have been a little bit of a mix. I got the impression that maybe they did a little bit of a camera move and then maybe some rear projection mm-hmm. to give that that stretching hallway where the door keeps getting further and further away.
Yeah, yeah.
And then of course, it was obviously a actual physical giant doorknob that she struggles
really?
With.
Now, I was watching that thinking that they had shrunk her. I'm just kidding. No, but yeah,
we're in a rare mood tonight, aren't we, Lydia?
with a few things obviously there. And of course the spinning in and the spinning out to denote, you know, when she's dreaming and when she's not.
I have to admit that with that dream, I was really expecting this film to look a lot different than it ends up looking.
How so?
I found that, you know, the dream was very surreal, and with the long, with the odd, you know, extending hallway shots. And I was kind of expecting more of that kind of film work throughout the film, and you really don't have it. After that dream, after she wakes up from that dream, the rest of the movie is really pretty...
Straightforward
and normal, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Well, that's interesting. So if Christopher were to shoot this film again, let's say we were remaking it just for gits and jiggles, and we're going to have Michael Bay or somebody do it, there would be a lot more dream sequencing kind of wibbly wobbly. Not going to say the...
I would expect more interesting camera angles other than just the set the camera in the room and have the actors be in front, you know, just stand in front of it, which I think is what most of the rest of the film was.
Yeah, that's very accurate. I don't recall a lot of camera movement throughout the rest of the movie. But I think that's part of kind of what made that one specific scene stand apart was, yeah, it definitely were... There were definitely angles and shots and things in that, albeit brief, scene that were, I think, unusual for this era.
Well, the woman wakes up from this dream, and she hears some arguing from outside. She goes to
Janet.
Her...
Let's call her Janet, since that's...
Let's call her Janet instead of just the woman, yes.
Yeah, thanks.
She goes out towards the balcony, and she looks across to the other side of the hotel and sees a man arguing with his wife.
But sees only the man, doesn't see
just
the wife.
Just the man, yes. The woman is off, kind of off camera, hidden by the curtains. This man, Vincent Price.
Woo-hoo. Yay, at this
yes,
point we
very young, nice, handsome,
very
young Vincent
young.
Price.
Well, and you can't tell quite at this point. At least I couldn't, in the version that I was watching, quite see his face at that point. Obviously, his voice is just so iconic. You know, mm-hmm. It's
oh, absolutely.
Price. But yeah, you can see until a little bit later in the movie that he is incredibly... He's very young in this. This is easily the youngest I've seen him in any movie.
Yeah, I think the same thing. Seems to me, I always thought he always had gray hair or something.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. I thought, well, he's a brunette. I thought he was a blonde. Okay, maybe not a blonde, but a silverback for sure.
Yeah. But he's arguing with his wife, and he admits, or he confronts her and says that he wants a divorce. And she, of course, says, fine, I'll give you the divorce. But
she says, and she mentions, too, at this point, you can be with Elaine.
Yes, yes. So apparently an affair has come to light, and he wants a divorce. He wants to marry Elaine, and she says, he's fine, I'll give you your divorce, but I'm going to make sure everyone knows what kind of man you are. Doesn't she actually call him by his name in this argument, the great Richard Cross, and how he...
That's a good question. It's not something I actually paid attention to.
Yeah, I meant to go back and listen, because I remember thinking, you know, it's a shame that they reveal who this person is so early. I have to go back and rewatch it. That shame on me for not going back and rewatching. I was going to bring this point up and then not have any evidence to the point.
Well, the people that are, you know, for our audience who are listening, you know, when you're watching it, then you can say Christopher was right or Christopher was wrong.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just kidding. Or listen at least and say yes, they did or yes, they didn't.
Elaine was just about to leave.
I didn't interrupt too soon.
Perhaps it's just as well things worked out like this, Margaret. I've decided to ask you for a divorce.
A divorce?
Well?
Why should I divorce you?
Oh, please, Margaret, let's be sensible. Whatever we had for one another is gone. We've been afraid to admit it before, but it's true. Elaine and I... Well, I love
her. You never loved anyone but yourself.
Please, Margaret.
I was good enough for you once, but now you want someone younger.
It's not that way at all. It's just that I can't go on with you any longer.
All right, Richard. You can have your divorce. You're right. We are strangers. But I have some pride, and no one's going to think you cast
Please,
me off like
Margaret.
That. You want your precious Elaine, and you can have her. But people are going to know the truth. I'll start right in by telling the room clerk you've been entertaining your girlfriend in our apartment. Then I'll call the newspapers. careful, cautious Richard, destroying everything he is for the sake of a cheap
get little... away from that
you
phone, Margaret.
You ask for it, you're going to get it.
Leave that phone alone,
I'll enjoy
alone,
telling
Margaret.
Your friends
leave that
you and your lover have been up to...
I hate you.
But in this argument, he gets angry at this at his wife, picks up a silver candlestick, and gives her a good wallop, and we see him follow her body as it slumps to the ground. You just see
who hasn't done that? I mean, who hasn't gotten really annoyed with somebody at some point and hit him over the head? We all do that. I mean, every once in a while, you just lose your temper, and you just hit somebody with a candlestick, because we all have candlesticks laying around. Maybe that's just me.
Sometimes you scare me.
Yeah, no, I'm being facetious. I haven't hit anybody with a candlestick yet, but yeah, it's funny how it is. It's always in the hall with a candlestick.
if this were Clue, yeah. But having seen this, the woman stumbles back and goes into some sort of
I'm building the tension before you say
okay.
It. Go.
Oh, as what's revealed to us later as shock.
Shock. Ah. Which I think in the radio program they say about 6 times in a row, shock.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
In the movie I was a little...
With an echo.
Yeah, shock, 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 shock. I was really relieved that they didn't do that in the movie. I was prepared for it, grimacing, gritting my teeth, and then they didn't do it, and I was so relieved.
No. But the hotel doctor, remember this is the late 40s.
First... Her husband has to show up.
Oh, that's right. Her husband shows up and finds her.
Oh, she has a husband.
That's right.
She's in the hotel.
Yes, the MIA, the POW, finally checks in, goes to the room, and finds her just frozen on the couch.
Staring in horror.
Staring in horror, unresponsive. So he calls the hotel doctor, which, keep in mind, yes, this is the late 40s. Hotels had doctors. And this doctor... says, well, aren't you lucky? There happens to be a really good doctor staying right at this hotel. This is right up his alley. And gives him a call. And, of course, it turns out to be Vincent Price. Dr. Richard Cross. Yes.
Yes. Which is, you know, hilarious. Actually, it's not hilarious, but you should just cut that whole part out.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. This is going to be one of those weird nights.
Yeah, this is one I'm actually going to need to edit. All right.
You can leave it in there and let the whole world know how we've done it. Yeah. Or you can let people...
Pull back the curtain. That's right.
Yeah, and reveal the dead body of the wife on the floor. Yeah,
but
I'm making a face right now, but you can't hear it.
While Dr. Cross examines the woman and kind of tries to get a feel for what might have thrown her into this shock, he realizes that his hotel room was right across from her balcony, and he wonders, could she have seen what had happened the night before?
This is, I think, one of those scenes with Vincent Price where it's funny. I'm going to say this. I'm going to get in trouble for it. Hopefully, people that are listening will get onto Facebook and get onto our website and say, you horrible woman, how dare you say this about Vincent Price? But I think this is one of those moments where you're watching it and you realize Vincent Price is not necessarily an exceptional actor, but he has, I'm telling you, I'm waiting for the candlestick to hit me any minute. I don't know that I would call him an exceptional actor. However, he has a screen presence. He is one of those people that once, you know, he may not be doing much, like his face may not be moving much. You may not see a lot of emotion going across there, but you cannot take your eyes off of him. You know, even at this age, he's very young, and this is, you know, I don't know what sequence of his films this is. Even though there's not, it was kind of struck me that the husband, you know, whose character name is Paul, is doing a lot more acting and a lot more emoting, you know, during all of this that's going on. And Vincent Price is sort of almost stiff. Like, stiff isn't the right word for it, but he's very subdued, I think, is the right word for it.
Yes, he plays everything very cool. Yeah.
He does. He really, and I don't think I've seen anything with him in it that he doesn't do this. But even though he's not moving around, you don't see a lot of gesticulating. He seems, you know, thinking about it now, he seems to barely move. You know, he will move across the room as he needs to, but you don't see a whole lot of big gesticulation. But he seriously, you're watching him, you know, just turn his attention as he's pulling a cigarette out of its case, you know, turn his attention to the window, and you know that he's thinking, I wonder if that window can see my balcony. You know, it's
right.
He's that level of actor. I think that there's not a lot of acting, but you just can't take your eyes off of him.
No, I agree. I was thinking the same.
There is a lot of acting. I'm not really sure which.
I'm not sure either, but you're right. Because as far as like facial expressions or whatever, there isn't a lot there. It's just a real minor. You see, like maybe an unemotional face, maybe go to a little bit of a frown.
Yeah,
a light brow. Yeah, yeah. Very. It's very subtle. And all his films that I can think of is he's either got just a slight upturned smile or maybe a slight. You'll frown, and yeah, he doesn't do a lot of emoting.
Maniacal strangulation look. Every once in a while, you get that crazed look. Not very often, but
yeah, he's not an emoter. No,
he isn't though. But and he's a remarkably tall guy. You can see whenever he comes into the room with anybody else when he's standing in proximity to another male. Obviously, a very tall man. But yeah, you just I'm stuttering because I'm so in awe. I can't take my eyes off him. I have a wallpaper of him actually on my computer right now. I'm just staring deeply into his eyes. It's not true. I'm totally joking.
No, he is very tall. When he's standing there with Lieutenant Paul there, Paul looks like a kid playing dress up.
He's a head taller than anybody else he's in frame with at any given time.
Yes.
And how did we get on this? I'm sorry. So
I don't know. Anyway,
I think that was like a 5 minute. I think I just fangirled.
You did on Vincent Price. That's awesome.
Vincent Price. There you go. Now you know what kind of woman I am.
Well, Dr. Cross decides that he needs to investigate this. And so he sends he sends Janet to his sanitarium that he has right outside of town.
I think you're in sanitarium.
Sanatorium? Sanitarium?
I think it's a sanatorium. I think a sanatorium is for health. A sanitarium is for mental health. I could be mistaken. Honestly, this is a major plot point.
He sends Janet to his private hospital that he has right outside of town. I believe. Were they in L.A. or San Francisco? I think they're L.A.
San Francisco.
San Francisco? Okay. Thank you.
We're just going to disagree on everything. That's all right. Makes it more interesting. But yeah, it's outside of San Francisco, and even though the husband, you know, oh no, I think I'd like to keep her inside San Francisco, you know, well, you know, Dr. Cross is the expert, he's the best man in the field, so you should probably do what he says.
Right, so they agree, and so Janet goes to this private hospital, where we meet Nurse Elaine, and I think Dr. Cross there explains to her why he's brought this woman.
Well, and I was in the radio play. Yes, that's where we meet Elaine. In the movie, she comes in to pick up Janet. And okay, ladies, this one's for you. I was struck by the fact that you have this woman who's clearly a paid nurse in a hospital. Not at that time. Not at that period, a highly esteemed role necessarily, but she's got the fur hat on and the gloves, and she's got the nice coat on, you know, and she may be in like a nurse's uniform underneath, but it just always fascinates me. I love to watch in this kind of thing. I always notice the women's clothing, and it's not something intentional. It's just you can't help but to notice it. They have these incredibly beautiful outfits and costumes we think of as incredibly beautiful, but which were just standard clothing back in that era. So,
or you could think that if she's coming in with the furs and everything, think that she's also been having an affair with a probably very wealthy doctor.
He probably gave her that hat.
Yeah, so maybe she's been getting some gifts.
He said, "You'd look great in white. Here, have a white hat." That's how it works. But yes, they do eventually, of course, get out to the sanitarium, whichever it is, and get Janet into a room and start. But she's still very restless, still not speaking, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. I think when she does finally come through, she does see Dr. Cross and, of course, accuses him of murder. He killed her, and he spins it that she's delusional, of course, and she needs further treatment there at the hospital.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, and it was
I was just contemplating whether I want to go through really that much
all the
more
details.
Of the plot.
No, I don't think so. But it did kind of make me laugh a little bit, and this is just a little bit of the twisted brain that I have. It kind of made me laugh. There was a point, I think it may have been in the hotel, may have been later in the hospital, but at some point Paul looks at the doctor and says, whatever it takes, just get her well again. And the way he said it, I kind of thought, wow, being the twisted person that I am, that seems kind of harsh. Like, I don't really care what happened to her. Just make her better so that I can take her home.
Exactly.
Okay. We are talking. Okay. This is the way that men care about women in the 1940s. Just get her well again. I'm not worried about the cost. I just want to make sure she can cook breakfast. Make sure that.
Tell it to me straight, Doc. Will she ever be able to clean and cook again?
Yeah. Exactly. Am I going to have to make my own food or? And no.
What about babies? Can she make babies? Yeah.
Now, honestly, I sort of in the hotel room kind of kept expecting him to say, "Well, is she going to be okay for like the next 15 minutes? Can we have a little break together?"
Yeah. But, It's been two years,
dude. It's awful, but also true. That was exactly where my brain went during that moment. So
I had similar thoughts because I'm thinking, well, they probably didn't have anything more than just the wedding night, because they're both very young and he's been gone for 2 years and she doesn't have it. Apparently there's no kids,
obviously, and, no kids.
And obviously
she has Kristen Stewart's mouth. That girl is not having any kids. I just said that out loud. leave it in, let everybody know how I feel about Kristen Stewart. Did you not notice that, especially when she's like in the sanatorium and she's like, and I was like, she has Kristen Stewart's mouth, oh my gosh.
One thing I did notice, speaking of while she's in the hospital, there was a scene, forget what they're trying to do at the moment, but when she starts like writhing in the bed, and it doesn't sound like...
I know the scene you mean.
Yes. I mean, if you were just listening, it was kind of one of those scenes that you're thinking, boy, I hope there's no one on the other side of the wall listening to this.
I think probably part of the reason that they had Janet play Janet, and I'm sure she's a lovely person, but maybe not the strongest actress in the world. On the other hand, the direction could have been very poor. So, but yeah, there was definitely a moment there where there were.
I think it was the scene, and it was the scene that I felt was the most powerful in the radio play, was when he was trying to put it in her head that someone was attacking her. And he was smacking the table, and he's hitting you. And in the radio play, I'm listening to it, and I was getting uncomfortable, thinking, oh my God, this is so powerful. And it's really what made me want to see this movie, is see how they play it. And it doesn't play as well in the movie, and a lot of it might be because Janet looks like she's in the throes of passion, not in the throes of, terror.
That could be. No, and I think when she's making those noises is before, when he's trying to make her forget about everything. You don't remember what's going on. Oh, no, you're right. That was actually the same scene. Huh.
I mean,
no,
they even had her, like, reaching up and grabbing the bed rail behind her.
Nope, that was definitely with the adrenaline, or the insulin.
Okay.
Because I remember that part, and you're right, that sounded not like somebody that's in discomfort.
No.
But there are a couple of scenes in this movie where, okay, bearing in mind that, yes, it's the 1940s, you still kind of are watching it going, that doesn't, that doesn't sound quite right there. That doesn't look quite right. And it's interesting. I think there's, the scene, and we're kind of skipping around a little bit here. I think we should get to the creepy guy in her bedroom.
Oh, right, the one of the what do you call it? I don't know if inmate is the right term. One of the other patients, I guess, in the hospital.
Maybe, yeah.
Gets out of his room during a thunderstorm and sneaks into a room. And yes, apparently he probably had heard. Maybe he was on the other side of the wall.
Oh, Christopher, isn't that my line? I'm supposed to say the naughty things here, and you're supposed to feel a little uncomfortable.
It's late. What do you want? Come on.
But yeah, so, you know, there's this patient across the down the hall that is frightened by the thunderstorms, and they've mentioned already, and I don't know if you caught this, but Dr. Cross is talking into his little recorder at some point. I know there's a technical word for that thing. We don't have them anymore, but, you know, and he's saying whatever his name was, it's not Evans, but it's something like Evans or Eric's or something like that, is not improving. He's getting worse. We're going to have him committed soon. And then later, sure enough, this guy shows up in the middle of a thunderstorm when Nurse Creepy, what's her
name? Elaine.
Nurse Elaine, thank you. And one of the other doctors are having a chat over coffee downstairs. And the doctor says, oh, yeah, he's upset by the thunderstorm. I had to lock his closet so that he would stop hiding in it. And I thought, well, that makes sense. Why not just lock him in the closet and let him feel safer?
Exactly.
You're going to lock him out of the closet so he feels more insecure? That makes perfect sense to me.
It's tough love, Lydia. Tough love.
I was wondering where tough love came from. It was the 40s.
Yeah, but he makes it his way into Janet's room and does try to attack her during the thunderstorm.
No. Different perception here. As a woman.
Yes.
you're waiting for the worst now, aren't you? No. Because if I recall correctly, and granted, I watched this fairly recently, he's trying to make his way down the hallway and somebody comes along and he hides in her room and sees her. And it was interesting because I think in the radio play, they played off as, oh, she was attacked or, somebody got into her room and tried to attack her and then ended up attacking a nurse or something like that. And in this, he's just looking at her when the nurse comes in. Heaven knows what he's thinking. We probably don't want to know what he's probably thinking, mommy, I'm afraid of the lightning storm. But, then of course, Nurse Creepy comes in. I'm just going to keep calling her Nurse Creepy for reasons that shall be revealed. But comes in and, she says, you got to get back to your room. And he freaks out on her. And he does what every man in the 1940s does when he's unhappy with a woman. He tears her sleeve off. That's what they do. When they're mad at a woman, they shake them and they tear their sleeve off. And that's how you know he's really angry.
There you go. That's the secret to 1940 angry man acting.
There was no beating of women. They just tore their sleeves off.
Just mad on just tore up the clothes.
Yeah, it's like the Scarlet Pimpernel or the, what was the thing with the A? You know what I mean.
The Scarlet Pimpernel to the thing with the A.
Oh, come on. It was Nathaniel Hawthorne. Everybody else is going, they're yelling the name of the book right now, yeah, saying, dang it, Lydia, why don't you know this? And I know, right?
Esther Prim.
The horrible was the Crucible.
No.
No.
Damn it, now you made me forget it.
Yep, you're right. The Crucible.
The Scarlet the Letter.
Pilgrim people. Yes! The Scarlet Pimpernel, the Scarlet Letter. I had half and half. But yeah, the torn sleeve of the 1940s is the Scarlet Letter of the whenever that was written.
There you go.
Thank you, Christopher. Yes. I needed help on that one.
Yeah, I can't believe it took. Even after you said Scarlet Pimpernel, I still couldn't come up with it.
I said the A, the Scarlet A.
Yeah, and the A, yeah. But yeah, so the rest of the film is a mix of Dr. Cross and Elaine trying to manipulate Dr. Cross into just keep it going and make her crazy, then no one will believe her.
And doing it. Of it. He does everything she tells him for a remarkably long period of time in this movie, and I think much longer than in the radio play.
Yeah, well, you also think the radio play was 30 minutes, and this film was 70 minutes. Yeah, 69, 70? Okay.
Much longer.
Yeah.
40 minutes longer, almost. Yeah, but and they did a couple of things in it that were a little bit different. We find out, of course, that the way that Dr. Cross disposed of the body was to put it into a trunk and have it shipped off to the Appalachians, I suppose?
Well, to his mountain cabin, which they also did in the radio play.
Mm-hmm. And then he goes up to dispose of the body. While he's gone, it's revealed that his wife has been missing, and then she's found as having tumbled down a rock slide or something, been hit in the head
exactly.
by a rock. And
An ex-con is found in the area, and so the police start investigating, thinking that maybe something happened to his wife. Maybe it wasn't an accident.
The neighbor, I think, was attacked and stolen from.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, you know, it becomes more of a question of, was she actually killed or did she die in the rock slide? And we, of course, have the Sam Spade isn't the right name for it, but the typical gumshoe, is that the word I want?
Gumshoe. Yeah, gumshoe.
Looking
the
for
copper.
Answers. The copper. The copper.
Yeah.
And I love the part. Well, and so, you know, during all of this going on and Vincent Price telling Elaine, you know, they know they're starting to investigate. They're going to find out what happens, you know. And this is the part that they didn't, I don't remember them doing in the radio play that it was extremely creepy to me, is when they're there by themselves and he's saying, you know, I can't. She says, well, you know, you could just make Janet disappear too. You know, we can just make our problems go away. And he says, no, I can't do it. And then this is where Elaine gets very creepy. She starts saying, oh, do you remember when we first met?
Richard, remember the first night I came here? Remember? You were alone. You were sitting here in front of the fireplace with a sick headache. The lights were out. You didn't hear me when I knocked, and I opened the door and you said, oh, it's you, Miss Jordan. You called me Miss Jordan then, remember? I told you I had to see you about Mrs. Penny's prescription. You talked to me and you saw that I was tired and you asked me if I wouldn't have a drink. I hesitated and you said, I won't bite your head off, Miss Jordan. We had a drink. Remember? You sat here for a long time and then suddenly you laughed and you said your headache was gone. And you asked me about my family and I told you. And we both laughed. Remember? Then you took me in your arms. I know you remember that.
I mean, she gets all creepy and clingy and womany. And this is why I'm always going to be into men, because that's just creepy. And I can say that as a woman. I'm a woman, by the way, in case you didn't notice. But no, she gets incredibly creepy at this part. And I thought it's so funny because this is awful of an idea as it is that that the doctor would have, in a fit of passion, you know, killed his wife and would be still trying to hide it and all of that out of, you know, his own fear. The creepier part to me is Elaine. Like, she knows that she's with a man that is capable of killing a woman if she does something that he doesn't like. And she's just pushing him and pushing him. And it's just super, super creepy to me. So you feel, you know, eventually you kind of feel sorry for Vincent Price's character. You start to think, well, maybe he's not that bad. But honestly, if he's a woman that is, let me try that again in English. If he's with a woman that's that creepy, he's probably pretty creepy himself. But
she definitely gets extremely manipulative.
Yeah, that whole scene with the manipulation and, you know, that whole thing I just thought was, I think, probably creepier in the movie is far creepier than in the radio play. The creepiest part is him getting Janet to believe that she's being attacked, you know, and messing with her head. And I thought in the movie, this scene where Elaine is telling him what to do and trying to, you know, backwards manipulate him into it was much creepier.
Yeah, very much. It's very interesting, different points of view and what gets sort of highlighted as, well, I guess, to not put too fine a point on it, the creep factor, between the two.
Yeah, that is the actual word for it.
Yeah. But I think that Dr. Cross does agree to murder Janet while pretending to treat her, but then...
I have another thing I wanted to talk about. I said I didn't have any notes. but no, the scene, too, where the detective comes to his house and says, you know, oh, here, I wanted you to see the coroner's papers, the coroner's findings. You know, it turns out that your wife was murdered. And at first I thought, you know, oh, Vincent Price is... This is one of the moments, especially where I was watching and I thought, Vincent Price is not an exceptional actor because he says, oh, she was murdered. And I thought, okay, even if he's, something's going to happen here. If Jimmy Stewart was playing this part, he would get that panicked look in his eyes, you know? And you know, if, oh gosh, I can't even think of another good example. You know, if I can't imagine Brad Pitt playing a character that murders his wife, but if he did, he'd get that, you know, like really intensely concerned. What? She was murdered kind of thing. And Vincent Price just says, oh. Yeah.
Vincent Price is like in permanent suave mode.
And it was interesting. Yeah, because he seriously, I think his reply is, oh. Yeah, you know, and I thought, who would say that? If they're either trying to cover it up, they're going to say, you know, oh no, how horrible. Or if they're, you know, not trying to cover anything up, then they're going to say, what? You know, I can't believe it. You know, but he just kind of is very subdued through the whole thing.
That actually makes his character not really work. Because he's so subdued through the rest of the film, you kind of wonder why he even would pick up the candlestick and strike this woman, because it doesn't seem to be in his nature at all.
See, that's a good point. That's not something that I had. I think because that happens so early in the movie, you don't question it. If it happens at the end of the movie where he's very, very calm through everything, and then all of a sudden, you'd almost think he'd have to have like a psychological flip. Like he'd have to have like, you know, split personality or something like that. But in the scene, he... You know, he just is very quiet through the whole thing, and the detective is saying, you know, well, you know, we're going to find the guy, and we're going to make sure he, you know, we want to exhume her body to, oh, well, no, I guess they already exhumed her body, but, you know, we're going to start pursuing this. Oh, we want to find the candlestick is what he says. And Vincent Price says, you know, so you think that it was this other man that killed him and so on and so forth. And it's almost like up through this entire scene, he just is kind of thinking of a way he can get out of it. And then at some point he looks at the detective, or I think the detective says, well, you do, if this man killed your wife, you want him to be punished, don't you? And he looks at the detective and he says, if the man is guilty, he must be punished, of course. And it's like at that moment you think, oh, so this is where he realizes, you know what, there's no getting out of this. And that's kind of, to me, where the movie changes. It goes from him trying desperately to find a way out, which is crazy because then the next moment, you know, as soon as the detective's out the door, he's calling Paul and saying, yeah, we need to give her insulin therapy so that Dr. Cross can kill Janet. But it was interesting because it was like at that moment, though, you think, okay, he says, yes, the man that did this is definitely going to be punished in the end. But then he turns around and says, oh, we're still going to try and give her, you know, the insulin shots to kill her or so that she can't testify against me.
Do you think that that's where the beginning of his conscience kind of starts nagging at him?
Yes, I think that's exactly.
And then it comes to a head when he's actually doing the insulin treatment. And then finally that last injection, he's like, no, I can't do it.
Meanwhile, Paul goes over to Dr. Cross's, you know, his in what do you call those guys? The guys that teach you everything you know. Your first boy? No, not first boyfriend.
Oh, teacher. Yeah. Former teacher and colleague.
Now I really hope nobody listens to this, but yeah, his mentor was mentor. You know, so Paul goes over to the mentor and says, you know, Janet, when she comes out of these insulin shots, is telling me that Dr. Cross killed his wife with a candlestick. And the doctor says, well, that's just crazy talk. But, you know, when you come out of insulin therapy, interestingly, usually the people are very lucid for that first little period right afterwards. And Paul says, well, take a look at this, and shows him a newspaper clipping that says, sure enough.
Oh, that's right. I forgot the newspaper.
Mrs. Cross was killed with a candlestick.
Yeah, there's a, I don't know if that was just for the movie or if the media was and the police were a lot different back in the 40s, but that's the kind of details that you wouldn't expect to find in the paper when they're still looking for the murderer.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, it is, though, how what convinces the mentor to go over, and he calls up and says, hey, I want to talk to Dr. Cross, and the nurse says, well, I'm sorry, Dr. Cross is giving Janet her final insulin shot, and he says, well, we'll be there right away. And it's amazing how a 45-minute drive from San Francisco takes 30 seconds in the movie.
Well, traffic was much lighter in the 40s.
That is true. Fewer cars on the road. That's very accurate. And no speed limits, probably.
Yeah, no kidding.
But yes, they get there, as it were, not quite in the nick of time.
No, I thought Dr. Kratz had
no.
said he wasn't going to do it.
you're right. I'm not going to do it. Give me the whatever it was that he was going to shoot her up with. And Elaine says, no, no, you have to do it. You have to go through with it. And they get into this big argument. And all of a sudden, Dr. Cross has his hands around her throat. He's strangling the life out of her. She struggles against him. But no, they step behind a screen. And as he squeezes the final breath out of her, and she drops to the floor. We actually don't see it because they are behind a screen, because this is the 1940s. And you can't actually see somebody murdering somebody on camera. That would be wrong.
Exactly. And that's something, too, again, I really meant to go back and now I also meant to go back and actually listen to the radio play. I don't remember him killing Nurse in the play.
He does.
No.
So interesting.
Okay.
A couple of points that changed dramatically, I think, between this this production and the radio production. You know, you just don't ever hear kind of what happens to Elaine in the end, I think, in the radio play. I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure you just don't ever hear what happens. I think at some point he says, I don't like you anymore. Go away. And in the movie, no, he actually strangles her to death.
So in the end, they still end the thing with the same scene with him doing his final dictation, and the police coming in and him, oh, just let me finish this. And again, very, very cool and suave, finishes his report and hangs up his little dictaphone or whatever they called it there.
Dictaphone, yeah, that was the word that I came to mind when you said
dictation. I think that was it.
Yeah.
Yep. Puts on his coat and walks out the door. And, of course, Janet makes a full recovery.
She smiles and says, Paul.
Paul. Oh, you remember. Yes. And that is shock. Yeah. So it was interesting. It was interesting to listen to the radio play and watch the movie and kind of see and or hear the differences and the similarities between the two.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think, obviously, you know, you're going to have a little bit of difference between a radio and a film production, because you just don't have the ability to do certain things with radio that you can do with film, and vice versa.
No, but I actually found myself, I liked the radio play better than the film. I thought the shortened story and the, I guess, you know, your mind can imagine so much better than what anyone can show you on screen. And so, like I was saying, there's so many scenes that I think work better when all you can do is hear and imagine.
Well, and that's that's a valid point. I think with so many different types of medium, I mean, we're talking obviously primarily about film here with Orphaned Entertainment, but now there's the thought, something we hadn't talked about was, you know, branching out into maybe books and things like that, you know, books that are out of print and things like that. But we have such more vivid imagination with the mind that I think with any film that we watch, if we have a preconceived notion about it, any of us will be disappointed on some level, you know, in some point or another. And I think probably the things that disappointed you or, you know, that you liked better about the movie were probably different from the things that I did, because obviously we each individually imagine them very differently, but you have such a wider scope with your imagination. And so when you're limited by what's just on the screen and you can only, even if you can imagine, you know, the textures and the dimensions that are going on in the film, you still aren't going to have the infinite space to imagine that you would have if you were just reading or listening to something.
Yep, valid point.
Was that too deep for this discussion?
No, absolutely not. Well, maybe for this particular discussion.
Maybe we should save that for a panel or something later. But it was interesting. I do agree. I think there were certain things about the movie that I was a little disappointed about. But mostly, I think it was interesting. I was kind of more caught up in the differences rather than what I was disappointed with. You know, I didn't think so much, oh, I wish they had done it this way, because that's how I imagined it. More, it's just, oh, how interesting that they added that. Or I can't think of anything that they took out, just probably for time purposes. But I did find it very interesting, some of the things that they added, like, of course, Elaine's creepy nurse's ending, you know, all that kind of thing.
Yep, very interesting. Still fun to watch and fun to listen to. So, you know, choose your poison, or, you know, listen to one, watch one, watch and listen to both. You know, your call.
Do it at the same time.
Do it at the same time.
Play the radio. Now it's all getting very Pink Floyd, but maybe not that way. But yeah, they both definitely have merit in their own rights.
But I think that will do it, Lydia. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Christopher. I really enjoy this, you know, creepy little interludes that we have together.
And,
not that you're creepy. I'm acknowledging my own.
I am. It's okay.
Yeah. You know, I'll fight you for it. You know, on three, we'll do rock, paper, scissors on three.
That'll work really well on a Skype.
What did you do? No, you go first.
No. What did you do? I got Spock.
Paper. Yeah. Yes, Spock. Nice. I'm a lizard.
But I want to thank everyone for listening to this rambling discussion on shock.
Shock.
We'll be back and sometime in the next month with another fun film or something.
Something definitely interesting or fun.
Exactly. But any feedback, if you see any of these or listen to anything we've talked to or watch any of the films we've talked about, please drop us a line or an email. Let us know and what your thoughts on the matter. Join us on our Facebook page. Just search for Orphaned Entertainment and you'll find us there. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.